It's a great music. Z103.com, Friday morning at the TCB Games AM Oldies program. Monty the Music Man Seaburn's time for episode number 6 of The Basics of Economic Development. Mark Wickersham in the studio.
Hey, yeah, good morning. Glad to be back in the studio with you and using a new microphone. Congratulations on some new technology. Has to be an improvement over my cell phone call in from a couple of times.
Actually, that worked out pretty well. We're just glad to see you in person.
Yeah,
we were missing you around here.
Thank you. Glad to be back.
All right.
Well, on today's show, I want to talk about Indiana state property tax reform. So governmental policies sometimes are at the heart of the basics of economic development, right?
And oh, yes.
As we've discussed over the last year, I'm not a policymaker. I simply work within the rules that are created by the lawmakers at the federal, state, and local levels as they relate to industrial development in the community. HQ'd itself is not a lobbying, we're not registered lobbyists, so I don't typically say much about public policy debates unless I'm asked, as you know from previous shows, there was one fundamental that I was last year very concerned about, and that was our society's growing flirtation with socialism and how that can impact the direction and how you practice as an economic developer. Thankfully, that's no longer a particular threat at this point, so we can move on to other topics. And this week in particular, the Indiana General Assembly has been debating property tax reform. And they're doing it, imagine this, they're doing it from the perspective of, drum roll, the property taxpayers themselves.
Oh!
That's refreshing. Or scary if you're a governmental official at the local level. So Senate Bill 1 is being debated in the General Assembly, as well as Governor Braun's Freedom and Opportunity Agenda. They're taking center stage at the State House this week, and a lot of local elected officials from our county and from around the region are testifying, in fact, at the General Assembly regarding the system. Well, Indiana's system of property taxation, regardless of what you know we're experiencing, is still, frankly, among the most friendly in the nation. We are the envy of a lot of places with how effective our property taxation system is, and limiting, both from the taxpayer's perspective, so they don't, you know, have to pay too much, as well as how it benefits employers and industrial development. And so again, property taxation as a topic is fairly central to the basics of economic development. It clearly impacts market forces related to property ownership in Indiana, in particular, and central to defining a lot of economic decisions. Well, I remember a comment from former Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, and I was an employee with the state of Indiana at the time at the Indiana Economic Development Corporation that was created, in fact, by Governor Daniels. And he said something that I've never forgotten. Now, okay, in all honesty, I don't know if he was quoting somebody else or whether this was his original comment, but I think this is as accurate today as it ever has been. Government doesn't create jobs. Government creates conditions which make job creation more or less likely.
Ooh.
And that makes sense. I mean, it just says it all. It's not that the government does it directly, which is something that kind of got out of whack the last 4 years.
Wow.
But I think that's an important thing to keep in mind. And former Governor Daniels was particularly passionate about reforming Indiana's property tax system. And here's why. He observed that historically, and we're talking about 1960s, 1970s, early 1980s, local units of government would, in essence, figure out how much money they wanted to spend as an entity, and then they'd manipulate the property tax system to generate the funds necessary to pay the bills. So they'd start by deciding how much of the taxpayers' money they wanted, and then they would make determinations that created assessed values and tax rates in order to have that money available to spend. And what former Governor Daniels realized was that left unchecked, that particular system could create some real problems long term.
Oh, someone could definitely abuse that if they were so inclined.
Yeah. So Governor Daniels believed that you should actually reverse the process. Not unlike everybody else in society, figure out how much income you have, then decide what you can buy.
There you go.
Not the other way around. Well, so how do you actually do that at a governmental level? So Daniels figured out that the way to do this was to amend Indiana's constitution to limit property taxation rates, because that could be done in the constitution. So they pegged them at 1, 2, and 3%, depending on the type of property. And then, in addition, the assessed valuation of that real estate was to be based on actual market prices. So then you could figure out, okay, what do I think the market says our properties in our county are worth, and based on a 1, 2, and 3% tax rate, how much revenue will that generate? Now I can go about setting my spending priorities if I'm a unit of government. Okay, well, truth is, over the past several years, those decisions obviously have not been popular for local municipalities, because it, in fact, restricts their and limits their ability to spend money, which was kind of the point. But it also didn't really work the way Governor Daniels thought it would work either. So, for example, some units of government, prior to the change, they were already taxing well above the 1, 2, and 3% rates. So circuit breakers were created, as they're called, to minimize the impact of those lost revenues because of the fact that they were over those limits in the first place. And then trending was established as a way to try to figure out the market impact on assessed valuation. Then local units of government also kind of got creative and realized they had a discretionary authority to an extent. And they don't abuse this, but it's interesting that they can figure out that, for example, is a swimming pool on your primary residence, is that taxed at 1%, or is that something other than a residence? What about a detached garage or a barn, or maybe your property has extra acreage that you mow or whatever? Well, you may not necessarily, just because it's your primary residence, that entire impact, yeah, it's limited to 1%, but that within it, they may be changing some of the rates to be creative to help with the circuit breaker discussion.
Okay.
So, in addition to all of that, what we've heard in the economic development community the last several years is about a housing shortage. We've heard this everywhere we go. It was created in part by inflated market prices. It was created in part by higher interest rates. It was created in part by population changes. But as the market itself increased, so did the AVs, and to that point, property tax liabilities. And I want to read a couple of paragraphs here from Governor Braun's recent State of the State message to highlight this. And I'm reading directly from his speech. There are stories all over the state of Hoosiers struggling with huge tax hikes in their property tax bills. There's a young lady named Janice from Mooresville who hers went up 44% since 2021, last 4 years. There's a man named Grant in Plainfield. He saw his property tax bill go up 32% in that same period of time. Then there's Sean and Kimberly from Martinsville, whose property tax bill increased nearly 50%. Here tonight with us at the speech at the time are Rob and Stephanie from Greenwood. They've lived in the same house for 27 years, and since 2021, their property tax bill has more than doubled. And as they told me, and as I've heard from all over the state, while the tax bills keep rising, wages are not keeping pace. So this isn't sustainable, and property taxpayers need immediate help. So with that as kind of the introduction, local units of government now are putting a full court press on the legislature because they frankly aren't sure how to make up for lost revenues at the municipal level, given the constitutional limits on rates, and then doing reductions in assessed value when the governments have already tried routine budget cuts and they need the revenue. So it's been interesting for me as an industrial developer to watch another argument taking place on community development efforts. We've talked in previous shows about the differences between industrial development, community development, that kind of thing. Well, community development over the last couple of years has been focused on creating more housing. The idea being that if there's more choices, maybe values will drop, thus providing market-based property tax relief to property owners. And I just kind of react by saying, well, that's nice, but it's a weird solution that we're going to use property tax revenue to reduce property tax values. To quote Leonard Hofstadter from the popular TV show The Big Bang Theory, he often teases his friend Sheldon Cooper about being stuck between a rock and a crazy place.
Yes.
And that's kind of where we are on this.
Well, the question that comes to mind for me when you're talking about this, because they're going after this in earnest, I'm sure, on the state legislature level.
Absolutely true.
And I imagine it's got a lot of local governments, city and county, including our own, in a bit of a dither. But here we've got projects like EDF who are ready to come in and put up solar panels and thus bring revenue into the community. Would that not help offset some of the monies lost in the reduction of property taxes?
Well, I mean, that's a great point, because none of these discussions, and again, great point, because none of these discussions are one-dimensional. There are unintended consequences. It's like working with a bowl of Jell-O that's not been completely set up, right? I mean, you take a spoon of Jell-O out of one part of the bowl. If it's not firm, then the Jell-O moves. There are just so many moving pieces. And yeah, directly, a solar project, because they're done under economic development agreements, they guarantee the revenues and what they'll be paying. On the other hand, you have data that the opponents to solar rightly point out that they wonder if adding solar will cause a decline in property values to neighbors. Well, okay, is that good or bad when you're talking about in the context of property taxes going down? Property, if AV drops, property tax liability drops. Well, that's okay, but they don't want the value of their property to drop in a market sense, nor do some people just simply don't want to look at solar fields. I mean, I understand all sides of that debate.
Sure.
But to your point, if the one-dimensional question is, okay, if we lose the argument at the General Assembly, and in fact property taxes are lowered or limited, how do you recover the lost revenue? And at the moment, the discussion seems to be focusing on raising income taxes. And so once again, this is a circular argument and multi-dimensional, and I'm not sure how it's going to be resolved. But yeah, I mean, just in a one-dimensional way, I suppose, if you lose revenue from property taxation, you can make it up with the solar projects, assuming that federal policies haven't made it impossible for those to develop. Or, frankly, you go look for the types of projects that we've heard about in Washington, the drill baby drill. I mean, I'm sorry, Huntington County, the southern two-thirds of our county, we're floating on the old Trenton oil field. So there may be other ways of accomplishing that. But the long and short of it is, it's a multi-dimensional question. And hopefully there'll be a multi-dimensional answer.
Well, I certainly hope there will, and because certainly it's, I mean, it's hard to say where this bill will wind up if it ends up passing, but it is a very interesting thing to put out on the table.
Especially when you also, you know, back to my little rock in the crazy place idea. I mean, society has dealt with this question for decades. It's like the taxpayers and voters demand particular services and things from the government. But when they get the bill, they're not really happy about paying the bill. And so it's another societal dynamic that we're all, every one of us are guilty of. We expect certain things out of our government, but I don't want to pay for it. So it'll be really interesting to see how the General Assembly deals with the question.
It really will, and you ought to keep us posted on, because I'm sure you're going to be following this pretty closely.
Absolutely, because the results and the decisions will impact how we do economic development in our county.
Yes, and I think there's a lot that could be developed around here, and we could really be thriving. I mean, I see this empty building and that empty building, and I just wonder to myself, what's going on with all this?
Well, we're going to come back to that topic in the next show. I know we're running short on time, but there's a new study out from the Zacher Company that talks about industrial space and that kind of thing, and it's actually way more encouraging than most people think. So,
okay.
But that's a topic for a full show, and we'll cover it.
All right. Well, again, thank you for a great show, and we'll be looking forward to finding out what's going on with this, and see you back here next week.
Very good. Thanks.
All right. Let's get back into it. Z103.com.